when you went to the union earlier over the issue of reclassification, what do you think was their attitude toward you as a woman? I mean, here basically was a very basic sex discrimination case. What do you think their concern and attitude was about the situation?
Well, they said they were for no discrimination against anybody, and they said as long as I did the work, I should have the classification. They really helped me. Now, whether that would have been their attitude if I hadn't known those two fellows I told you I became acquainted with and they happened to know my work, I don't know. But they did. And so I, as I say, I found out later that a couple of them had gone to the president of the union and said, well, she did the same kind of work as those fellows and she deserves it. I can't say what would have happened if that hadn't happened. But, no, they were very fair, and they said, oh, no, if you're doing that work, you're supposed to have that classification.
Do you have a sense of their intervening in any other way for other women?
I suppose they did if they went to them, but, of course, not very many women belong to the union. I think they're always glad to intervene if they think the person has a case. But they do encourage you to try to settle everything without coming down to the, that,
But you don't recall ever being discouraged by them?
No,
you don't make a
They never, not the ESG. I don't remember, I don't remember that when I was under 727 either. No, I don't remember ever being told that. No?
Now, backtracking a little, Frieda, to the point, say, about 51, 52, when there was the build-up for Korea, because you say up until this point there really had not been new hires. That's when new hires begin to come in. What were these new hires like? Do you recall women coming in at that point?
Well, women, but of course into this place where I was working, I mean in the IPBs, they were all men that came in. Some of them were young, some of them, I remember one fella, he had worked for one of the big auto companies in Detroit. He and his wife came out here. He came to work at Lockheed. She got a job in a store, I think. As a matter of fact, he was given to me to break in, so to speak. Well, you know, I don't care how good you are, how much you know. Somebody has to show you that this is we do this, and here's where we get the prints and all that. Well, I could soon see that he knew a lot more about it than I did, but. And incidentally, he was promoted fast, and he ended up, well, I've forgotten, I think he got on the change board, but he was on salary in about a couple of years. But they came from all, seemed like from everywhere. Of course, some of them were veterans, and yes, I can remember a couple of them in particular that were veterans. I don't know.
But there were no women coming in.
Not into this IPB group, but they were coming into the building. They were coming into records. No, they were coming into records. They came in as clerks. And they came in most all the classifications. I don't think any came into this provisioning that was also technical there. I don't recall any coming in during this Korean buildup in any technical classification, but they did come into clerical.
What sorts of differences did you note between the attitudes towards women coming in, say, in 51, 52 during Korea compared to 42, the war years when you came in?
Well, of course, they were used to women coming in now, so there wasn't that, you know, they weren't a novelty anymore. They just, you know, they came back, they hired them in, and a lot of them were rehires, but not all of them.
There were some new ones then, too.
Oh, yes. I tell you, at Lockheed, every time they had a build-up, you just got lots of people. Lots of people. Well, people wanted a job. You can't blame them, and Lockheed was hiring. And I will say that most of them were conscientious. Some of them weren't. But by and large, they were, and most of the women were good workers, but not all of them. Some of them, you want to shut that off just a minute? but I thought I ought to tell you that story.
Well, maybe I'll get it from him, too.
Well, you would get it from him, because this is not on tape here, because it didn't actually happen to me.
Yeah.
I didn't know about it, although I got to thinking, too, that they had a place down there called the Quiet Room where they had cots. Now, this was over in Spares during the war when I was not there. I was in another department. But they told about finding a couple in there. This man was in on the cot. And I guess, did somebody say they fired the woman? I think they fired both of them.
Oh.
Now, I'll tell you, I don't say that things didn't go on at Lockheed, but if it ever came to the attention of supervision, then I will say Lockheed always took action
mm-hmm.
when it was brought to their attention. I don't say that maybe they didn't look over some things, but if things really came, Lockheed always took action. They didn't, they wouldn't condone mm-hmm. any, you know. I also remember one time they had a check pool. Of course, that was illegal. And this fellow had the names. He was new. He was Chinese. And he had the names of people he was supposed to ask. And one of the secretaries had the same surname as the section supervisor. And didn't he go in and ask the section supervisor if he wanted to get in a check pool? Well, before that, I don't say if the supervisor didn't know they had a check pool. But when he was confronted like that, then it came out, they had to send something around that if anybody got in the check pool, there'd be disciplinary action, because, of course, you're not supposed to gamble on company time. So they didn't have a check pool for quite a while. But that's what I say. They probably winked at a lot, you know, overlooked a lot of things.
Now, when you finally did get on salary, it was about 50...
It was March of 57.
57. At that point, what had been your hourly rate when you switched over?
Oh, let's see. I'd have to check. I'd have to check back on my 56.
And what was your starting salary rate?
Well, I don't quite remember that, but I have my check stubs, so I can have those for you. Did you say you were coming one more time?
Well, let's see how far we get today.
Okay. $1 a week, but I'm not sure. Now, where in the world is the date on this? They're supposed to... For a while, we had a check stub when it was hard to find the date. No, this is 71. Let's see. I think there's some more.
We were talking about the kinds of changes during this period beginning with Korea. Did you notice any other kinds of changes compared to the that first war period during World War II when women first came in such great numbers?
Well, I would say by now, one of the changes I noticed was that the planes were becoming more sophisticated, and methods were changing, and things were, by now our books were being done right there at Lockheed on Verotype and Justowriter machines. I'm not sure if some of them still went out to a printer. Excuse me, maybe some of them did, but most of them were being done right there. Lockheed was, changing a lot of their methods, and there were women doing that, and of course that was cheaper than sending mm-hmm. them out to the printer. The prints were had changed. When we first started working on the prints, they'd call out the part any place all over, but... I think it was in 48 or 49, excuse me, when the Navy came in, we had to go to a bill of material. Excuse me, I got to get a drink. Would you like a pause? Even, not long before, some of the last years or two I was there, I remember a fella getting an old print out, one of the fellas in the group, and it was one of those that didn't have the bill of material, and he was complaining. He said, well, how do you expect me to find things around here like this? And I started showing him, and I said, you know, when I first started doing this work, this is the only kind of prints we had. It seemed to me that after that, he looked at me with a little more respect.
So it sounds like processes were getting more skilled.
Yes.
In effect, during the war years, in order to pull in large numbers of people who did not have that experience, The production process was broken down into such small units. During Korea, when you had so many rehires in production, would you say that the women coming in then were given jobs that were more skilled than the wartime jobs?
I don't know, because you see, I was not in the shop then, but I would say that the jobs were changing and becoming, we said, more sophisticated. A lot of the things that we had done by hand were no longer done by hand, and so there weren't as many of those little menial tasks to be done as had been done before. For instance, I told you about winding that blue, yellow, blue around there. Well, it seemed like by now they had one big wide one that was blue, yellow, blue. It said hydraulic on it, and she only had to wind one around. And I heard that. And then I know that they had made a lot of changes in the sheet metal department, because we would read about that in the Star, how they'd get a machine that would stamp out the old several where formerly it only stamped out a few. And of course, it wasn't quite at Korea, but later on they had a lot of some of these big parts were stamped out by computer, and the computer operated the machine. And that was one of the things I noticed. But still, even at that time, most of the women that came in were not, that I had contact with, were not coming into what I call technical jobs. They were still coming into clerical and production jobs. Of course, I think, now I think over in Materiel, women over there were getting better jobs. You know, that's where they keep track of all the material that comes in, and they have to know how much to order and all that kind of thing. I never worked there, but I did know a little bit about it. And, but no, I would say even during the Korean War, it seemed like not many women in technical jobs. Not, at least not in stage.
Was there, let's see, by that time you were 40.
Yes.
Did you ever experience any problems because of your age in the department, particularly for, as a woman got older, was there any problem with attitudes towards her because of her age?
Well, if there was, I didn't know about it. Of course, partly I am short, and partly I didn't get as wide as I am tall, like so many of those women put on a lot of weight. So, and by then, I had sort of established myself. See, I was in the technical job, so I don't know how much may have gone on behind my back, but not to my face. And even when I got ready to retire, I remember people that I'd known several years saying, well, they thought I was so lucky that I was taking early retirement. Well, I wasn't. So I don't know whether they, no, I never really run into that. And I think, now I'll tell you what I did run into when I went through my menopause period. Oh. And that was when our work was the heaviest. But, of course, I had a doctor that was giving me estrogen pills. And I had heard so much about this, you know, that women that get cranky and all during menopause. And so a lot of it was just steeling myself. Now, free to behave yourself, even though you, you know.
when was that? When did you go through menopause?
Oh, let's see. During, that was mostly during about, the roughest part was around 58, I think. And I was very busy then. And had, by then, I only had a group of about five men under me. And I suppose there were times that, but then a lot of them were irritable. Believe me, some of the men got irritable too.
But it's all right if they are, but if a woman does, it's because you're menopause.
Well, I, nobody ever suggested that to me till, several years later, about 10 years later, we were in a different building, and we had this fellow from, He'd been raised in France, and he was a citizen, but he was a little short fellow. And one day, it used to get awfully hot in that room. And, of course, he sat over by the window, and I sat over by the wall. And but now there was a fellow older than I that sat back of me, and he usually, you know, the air usually struck him about the same as did me. And I said one day, do you think it's awfully hot in here? And this little Marcel says, well, Frida, I've forgotten how he put it. But anyway, he thought maybe I was just having a hot flash. Well, instead of being, I found out one thing, that instead of acting like I resented it, I laughed and told him, no, Marcel, I didn't think that was a problem. I said, no, Marcel, that's not the problem now. I said, I think it's just hot. But I did find out that if you could laugh at those things or not let them, and it did strike me funny, you know, a sense of humor really helps a lot of things. But I didn't know, I don't remember any attitude toward that, except I know that the last couple of years I was there, maybe two or three, when they really began promoting all these women, I always thought that if I had been 10 years younger, I would have gotten a bigger promotion. But I could see when, if they looked over my personnel record, they knew I only had a couple more years to go. They weren't going to put me. Younger women were getting good promotions, but I thought that was only fair. I saw no. Now I'll tell you, we did get a higher classification in about 1974. Let's see, that was 3 years. Maybe 73. We got raised from a salary grade 3 to a salary grade 5, and I got that. Mm-hmm. But, of course, that was right there in the same department doing practically the same work. Doing a little more. It had gotten more complicated by then, and so they raised the salary grade. But I didn't resent that they were giving these women that were in their 50s better jobs than they would have ever given me when I was in my 50s, because... actually, at that point, the supervisor I had had so long retired about 20 months before I did. And, the new supervisor, I don't know. I mean, he was all right. I don't mean that we had any clashes. But I had thought of maybe transferring. They split our department, and they made these two men. Two younger men supervisors, which was all right, and I'd known both of them. I had thought of asking to go to be with the other one, and then I thought, well, he's on this plane that I don't know too much about. I would have to learn a lot of new things. And in here, I'm with the P3 and the F-104 and all the old books. By then, it seemed like if any old books came up, I always got them to see that they, you know. I had worked on many of them, you know, when they were being first being put out. So, and I thought, well, I'm comfortable here. Also, there was a classification. They were bringing women in now as editors, and that would have paid a little more than mine. But they had to use their eyes a lot. Mm. And so for those last 2 years, I thought, why bother? Why not just stay where I am?
So this division, this department split and all, this occurred in the 70s.
They were always reorganizing and splitting things. But they did split the IPBs and put they tried a different plan. They called the project plan, where they put all the S3s in one department. No matter what you did in spares, if it was S3, you were all in one department. And then, of course, the P3s were one. And because the 104 was so near out, I don't mean that there still wasn't action on that, but it was not a production model on it anymore. They kept it in with the P3. Mm-hmm. And so they tried that project plan, but we were the same building. They were just in another room, and if if either one of the groups got in a bind and needed more people, it was no trick to lend. They were called on loan to the. Of course, I never got a loan, but I mean the fellows that were the hourly people that would be loaned. And I heard since I retired that one time the one group got so far behind that they loaned one of the salaried people, because this one group got so behind with their work. So it was a change, but not not too radical a change.
Now, Frieda, going back to that. Well, actually, when you go into the Engineers and Architects Association, as your classification changes, it sounds like at that point you became a little bit more involved in union activities. You talked about the bean dinners. And did you go to meetings as well?
Well, they didn't have a lot of meetings. They usually had, the meetings were usually those bean dinners, and then when they were... they weren't regular meetings, like once a month. Then whenever they got ready to go into negotiations, they liked for you to go vote whether you wanted to strike or not. And then once in a while, somebody would, there'd be somebody, engineer or somebody in another field around here, and they would have him come speak, and they'd have a meeting. And he'd go. Usually, though, it was those bean dinners and then the meetings for negotiations. Now, they also had some trips. I remember we went out to Rocketdyne, to this place way up there that they're talking about now.
Yes,
you know. But we had that that trip that we could go, and I drove my car that day, and I went with some of the fellas. We went on a bus. Then also, they had a trip through the Chevrolet plant once. They had more educational kinds of things. They didn't have these rousing meetings like, well, actually, I think when I belonged to the shop union, I only went to about one or two meetings. And I remember one time the union chairman wanted all of us to go there for some reason. I can't even remember now why, and I went. But it wasn't anything... thing educational, and the ESG meetings, except at for the negotiation meetings, were more or less educational. Even at those bean dinners, I remember one time we had a fellow from Caltech talk to us, and I think one time a fellow showed his pictures from a travel, things like that. It was a program. It was not about they didn't mention. Maybe they'd say one or two things, but I mean, give this fellow a bouquet for having gotten so many new members or that kind of thing. But there was not any thing. They didn't knock Lockheed or anything except at the negotiation.
Were you ever approached to become an officer in union or a steward?
No, I never was, and I had so much going on outside that I never wanted to. It could have been that if I had ever wanted to be, I might have run, but I never, they also had that LERC. I never run for any office at Lockheed. It always seemed to me that, soon after I got my degree, then I bought a house, and I always had so much going on, and I just didn't want to take on that. And then I belonged to, while I was going down to school, I got very much interested in environmental issues, and principally because I saw this one class was going to take a trip to the mountains that summer. It was a nature study class. And I thought, well, that's a chance to pick up a few units and get up in the mountains. And so I scheduled my vacation and went with them. And so I joined this Desamount Club.
What was it called?
Desamount. D-E-S is for desert.
Mountain.
And you might even hear that. No, you won't, because it's out at Cal State, LA. It isn't really out there anymore. It broke away from there. But there was a professor from out there, Roland Ross, I don't know if you ever heard of him or not, that they joined this club. Then, of course, anybody could join it. You didn't have to be at the club. You didn't have to be a student at Cal State. But you had to go camping with them for, I've forgotten how many days, but of course, my having been up there at NS, that NS-130, that qualified me for it. And 1 year I was an officer in that. I edited the newsletter.
Now, this is after you were finished school, though.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes, I didn't take on any offices at Lockheed while I was going mm-hmm. to school. And I never, I don't know. There were always other people that really wanted them, and I figured if they wanted them that much, you know, let them have them. And another thing, they didn't like for salaried people in our department, because we were sort of leading, and they didn't want us to be union stewards. I don't say that they said we couldn't, but that was just kind of understood mm-hmm. that it would be the hourly people that would be the union stewards, you see, because we that would give us too much chance to influence the people. And the,
Oh,
so